You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware, IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me today, Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Marty Sleva. Hey. Brian Altano. We have a great show planned for you today. We're going to be talking Game of the Year Watch. We're going to be talking about, you know, it's Halloween time. We're going to be talking about some spooky games.
Spooky.
But first, this is a very special GameScoop. Yeah. We're live today.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. We're coming to you live from San Francisco. We're doing some experimenting.
Yeah.
You guys who are all viewing right now are lab rats. We're experimenting on you.
We're trying. We're the lab rats.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. We're testing out some new video features we're sort of toiling with here at IGN, as you can see, as you know, if you're watching here on the video page. It's sort of a new video player similar to our PS4 app that lets you like load up playlists of videos, and we're testing this new live chat feature that's provided by Rabbit. So if you see the little Rabbit button down there and in the corner underneath the player, if you click that, you just log in with your regular IGN login, and then you can chat along with us, talk about the topics we're talking about. If you ask questions, we can answer them for you.
Was this an actual rabbit, or is this a company?
There's a real rabbit on your that should be on your computer monitor.
Interesting.
It's a question rabbit.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, after the show, the episode will be archived, as usual, for you to watch on IGN, YouTube, listen to the audio podcast. If you're listening to the audio podcast, don't look for any rabbit in front of you. There's nothing. There's no rabbit there. That doesn't concern you. But first, it's been 4 months since we checked in with Game of the Year Watch.
Yeah.
We've been letting the world down. The world has no idea what games what games are good, what games are going to be contending for the Game of the Year honors later this year. So we need to catch everybody up.
I can't even think. I have like no concept of time. Like, what was 4 months ago?
July.
Okay.
We were just coming out of E3.
Was Obama still our president?
He was.
Okay, that was not before that.
Okay.
But Ebola had not yet decimated 3/4 of the world's population.
Please don't joke. This
is scared. We'll make through. We'll get through this.
Okay.
And so in the past 4 months, these are the games that scored a 9 or higher on IGN. Bayonetta 2, 9.5. Shadow of Mordor. Middle-Earth come first, right?
Yeah.
Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor, 9.3. Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, 9.1.
That last word doesn't seem spelled right.
A game I missed somehow.
Old Ultimax.
Velocity 2X, Sunset Overdrive, Forza Horizon 2, and Divinity Original Sin. Those games all received 9s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Sunset Overdrive review was really good.
Yeah, it was really well written.
Handsome.
Had some turns of phrases.
I don't like the man that wrote it.
Let's get off.
Biased.
Some good games up there.
Yeah. Well, no, of course, the caveat is there are still lots of big games still coming out this year.
But the point of Game of the Year Watch is just to sort of keep track of everything. So in that spirit, these are all of the games in 2014 that have joined the 9 and Over Club.
Mm. The 9 High Club.
The 9 High Club, yes. That is actually a much better name. Yeah. Bayonetta 2 and Broken Age Act 1, tied for best reviewed games of the year from IGN.
That Broken Age one was also written really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that one too. Yeah.
Not a fan of the man that wrote that one either.
Now, what I wonder about Broken Age is it's only Act 1.
Yeah, it's only Act 1.
When does Act 2 even have a release date?
I hope it's December, but I mean, we haven't heard anything about it. We know Double Fine's also, they just released Hack and Slash and Costume Quest 2, and they're working on Massive Chalice and Grim Fandango HD. So for a relatively small company, they have a lot of games in the pipeline. Yep. Yeah. So, my thing with that is just I will wait until it's done. Like, take all the time you need. You already got our 3.4 million.
But what I was wondering if, at the end of the year, if Act 1 is the only one that's out, I don't know, people might be hesitant to make that their game of the year.
Sure.
I would. It's only half the game.
I think so. I would be.
I enjoyed the heck out of Broken Age. That's one of the games when I was thinking back on this year, like, what is my game of the year so far to date? I'm like, I kind of forgot how much I enjoyed Broken Age. Uh-huh. It's very really charming. Lovely writing, lovely voice acting. Yeah. There's not anything that I didn't like about that game.
Yeah. I think it's sort of the same thing like with Telltale episodic games. You have to take them as a whole.
Yeah.
It's hard to, you know, reward a single game as game of the year.
I want to mention those. But continue going down the list. Child of Light and Shadow of Mordor, both 9.3s, Persona 4 Arena Ultimax, then South Park Stick of Truth.
Yeah.
I think people forget how good that game was, maybe.
Super good.
Yeah. That was,
and that's one of the, I'm not sure if Persona 4 was also on PS4, but South Park might be the only game on that list that was only old gen / not PC.
Yeah.
We still haven't seen an Xbox One or a PS4 version of South Park.
What about Dark Souls 2?
But it was on PC.
That was on PC.
Oh, on PC.
Yeah,
gotcha. Dark Souls 2, another game that people rabidly love.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything about that review, but it was really good.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah. I think I just review games too highly, I'm noticing from this list. That's the pattern.
Velocity 2X I've played a bit on PS4. That one I'm not super into, but maybe I just need to spend more time with it.
Yeah, I know Colin and Greg love it. I don't know, did you play it at all?
I love that genre, and it didn't grab me the way I thought it would. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love like shmups, basically, and I like the new mechanic they added to it. But hearing all the things about it and then actually sitting down to play it, I'm like, this is great, but it's not. I don't think this is game of the year quality to me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many other games on that list I would put above it personally.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's the other tough thing is that there are so many games that came out in 2014. I mean, you say that every year ever, but it's just hard to dedicate the time to certain things.
Yeah,
I mean, next year is only one game.
That's great.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
None of those games, I mean, Velocity 2X I played a little bit of, but like even games like Resogun or going back to last gen, Super Stardust, like to me they're all trying to measure up to like Geometry Wars, and to me that's like the gold standard of.
Well, we got Geometry Wars 3 coming out.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Really excited.
Is that this year or next year?
Yeah, I think that's December.
Well, then there you go. That's game of the year.
Okay, well done. Yeah. Why are we even doing this?
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for watching.
Good night, everyone.
No, speaking of like trying to find time to play the games, Transistor. Like, I still haven't finished Transistor. That came out, and then I got distracted by other stuff. But
did
I was
you review
really
Transistor?
That was a really well written review. Really well written review.
How many of these are you? Five?
A lot of them.
Five of the nine?
They were all good games. It's not like I'm overrating these games.
Okay, so either you overrate everything.
Or you're just like...
Or your bosses are giving luckily only the best games.
Or you're just stealing all the good games.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Did you review any
Dynasty.
Duds this year?
I'm reviewing Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
There we go.
Where is that review? The world is waiting.
It's in the next episode of Game of the Year Watch. Yeah.
Marty had Duck Dynasty and Sunset Overdrive
at the same time. That was a weird little mix. Yeah.
Transistor didn't make as big a splash as Bastion did.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's
Bastion
true.
Was kind of a phenomenon when it came out.
Yeah.
Transistor seemed to, I don't know, released.
I don't know because Bastion came out, that was one of those amazing Summer of Arcade XBLA games. You know, stuff like Limbo and Shadow Complex. And there was just that string of, and Geometry Wars 2, of amazing games that
Braid
would come
was
out.
A Summer Arcade game.
Braid. Yeah, Braid. And I think maybe that was, and there was also, Bastion was sort of before indie games like that became ubiquitous.
That's what I was going to say, is like, that felt like a much bigger deal to have these $15 really incredible, innovative, special experiences, and now we get a lot of those, like that's half of the video games that come out every year.
I mean, also the, you know, Transistor came out earlier this year on PS4 and PC, and the install base on PS4 isn't that big yet.
Yeah, true.
These nine are only half of the 9 High Club.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa.
Go to that's the back really half. Sticking that term.
The back half. include Sunset Overdrive, of course.
Oh, man.
Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, a game people maybe forget about from the first half of the year. Ultra Street Fighter IV, Shovel Knight, which is, Shovel Knight's one of my probably top five games of the year, for sure. Mario Kart 8, Forza Horizon 2, Hearthstone.
All right, you guys could talk about it, just...
I'm just gonna slip into a coma for a minute.
Nidhogg, which had about 5 minutes in the spot.
Yeah, but they were a glorious 5 minutes.
Yeah,
the game's really fun. And then Divinity Original Sin, which is an RPG that I haven't played.
Yeah.
Do we give out 9.1s at IGN?
Nope.
There was one. Yeah, Persona 4 Arena Ultimax. Yeah.
So many nines. Yeah. We just get to that nine and we stick there. That's a smooth landing.
Lots of nines.
Nidhogg is one of those games where I was sort of trying to refresh my memory before GameScoop about the first half of this year, and I feel like that's one that I'm ready to come back around. Like, we played that game more in the office than anything else, but I think Smash. Like, Nidhogg took over this office for a while, and then it's, you know, sort of time passed and we all moved on. But it was awesome, and like, I'd totally be down to have that one that's like back in the regular rotation.
The chat's working. People are saying, talk about Hearthstone. So here you go. You asked for it.
Yeah, this is YouTube. This is your time.
Hearthstone is probably going to end up being my favorite game of the year. I would be
certainly
very,
your most played.
Yeah, certainly my most played game of the year.
Do you play every night? Like almost? How many nights a week?
Probably 5 nights a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That I do play Hearthstone,
You went on an epic winning streak, right?
I was on an epic winning streak last night. Well, I probably won 10 games in a row, 10 ranked games, and that's probably my personal best for me. It's pretty good. But I would be very surprised if all of IGN got on board to pick that as game of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, I love it. If you have any interest at all in card games, the tutorial's great. It's free to download. Download it and try it. But I would never begrudge anybody for just not saying it's their thing. It is a little bit frustrating if someone won't even give it a shot. Because I'm like, this game's super polished and accessible, and it's not really fiddly like Magic the Gathering is, or you know, even some of the other digital card games are. Like, it's super easy and accessible to get into. So for people that are close-minded enough to even try, like, then I'm kind of like, well, come on. But if someone gives it a shot, and they're like, yeah, it's not my thing, like, I get it. Like, it's just not for everybody. But it's super, super good at what it does.
We should probably talk about Bayonetta 2.
Yes.
Just getting such high scores. We have some footage of this here. I don't know. That's it's the highest rated game of the year, along with Broken Age Act One.
I mean, you've played a lot of the game. I have. This game is it's one of the best 3D character action games.
Oh my God,
the last 5 years.
I started playing it too. Finally.
Yeah.
And I think when we talk about video game reviews, it's sort of, I've always seen them as sort of like a judging how well a game sets out to do what it's attempting to do. And in this game, it's saying we're gonna make a crazy, insane action game.
Yep.
And it nails that, completely nails that, you know? And it's the same way I sort of feel about what Shovel Knight did for kind of action platformers, Bayonetta does for third-person action games. And it's just so awesome to play this game.
Yeah.
I actually have a Bayonetta update from the last time I talked about it on GameScoop. What I said was, I don't really like third-person action games like this. They're just not my thing. Mm-hmm. But Bayonetta 2 got such high reviews that I was like, okay, like, this is one I can't ignore anymore.
Sure.
Yeah, it's too good. And so my update is I wasn't actually that wild about it.
Whoa.
Really? How far did you get?
I only did like the first 3 missions.
Oh. Sure.
You've
barely touched this game.
Yeah, but it's like now I have Sunset, you know, and now I'm playing Fantasy Life on the 3DS. So it's like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get back to it. So look, it's not a judgment against the game at all. It's the same as Hearthstone, right? Like, it's an incredible card game. But if you don't like card games, it may or may not be good enough to win.
I will say that Bayonetta, it doesn't do the greatest job of explaining to you why it's great early on. You sort of start walking around and there's weird, very awkward cutscenes. The voice acting
I skipped all the cutscenes immediately.
Yeah, but even the first few areas, it's just this guy mumbling over this loud song while you're walking around on top of like a dragon's back fighting people. And no one, you're like, why am I doing this? You're also invincible for the first 2 missions.
Oh, is that true?
Yes.
I didn't even notice.
Like, you cannot die.
You're really good.
No, but I took some damage and had to retry one segment. So I guess I got, 2 or 3.
You got to the first thing you can actually play. After that, the game really opens up and there's really beautiful big environments and you start upgrading your character and doing cool stuff and learning new moves. And then I think that's when it really nails what it's trying to do. But yeah, it's very much like, if you don't get what's going on in that first 20 minutes, which almost no one could possibly understand, it's hard to really say this is what I have to give it, you know?
Here's what I liked about it, I really was impressed with, is that it's showing me things that I have never, ever seen before. Like, I played and enjoyed Shadow of Mordor, but it felt very familiar.
Right? Yeah.
Whereas Bayonetta just feels insane.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I have never experienced
anything
like
this. Your hair became a meat grinder, and then you just ate all the bad guys.
And so I definitely give it huge credit for, like, I put a big premium on games that show me something new because I play so many games. Mm-hmm. And so I give Bayonetta credit for that, for sure. But I'm not saying the game's bad, but I'm just saying if you're not a fan of third-person action games and you're like, well, maybe this is the one for me, like, it didn't grab me.
Yeah. It's also, I appreciate the fact that it comes with Bayonetta 1. Like, in theory, the best version of Bayonetta 1 that you could play. I like that. More games need to do that.
Three of the very best games of the year are probably going to end up being Wii U exclusives, with Mario Kart 8, Bayonetta 2, and more than likely Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, are we still laughing at that console like we were a few years ago? I was the one guy sitting there going, like, this is going to work out. And everyone's like, cut and run, get away from it, Nintendo.
It's still probably not going to work out.
Well, I mean, so, I don't think it'll sell millions.
Wii U sales are up, but they're not up enough. Like, they're still only a third, they've only sold a third of what they hoped to sell.
Yeah, sure. So that was sort of the thing with that list. So you had those games you mentioned, you had, you know, Shovel Knight, which is, on PC, but also
multi-platform, 3DS.
Donkey Kong, and and Smash.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Donkey Kong.
Yeah, so I mean, but those are, we pretty much named the reasons you'd want to turn your Wii U on this year. Like, those are pretty much all the reasons. And granted, they're all amazing reasons.
NES Remix 1 and 2.
That's true. Which are awesome. Those are really good.
It's great.
Yeah. Awesome games.
Yeah, those are really good.
I mean, I think it took a little while, and I think even, like, the PS4 and the Xbox One aren't there yet, like, in terms of being, like, this is what a great library this system has.
Especially the PS4.
Yeah. Like, we all bought that system when it first came out. I don't know about you. I don't really know what you do with your life.
What the hell are you doing with your life?
Grow that thing on your face.
That's what he does. In my spare time, I work on my beard.
He goes somewhere, just poofs it out. He's like, I don't need video games. And I think the PS4 will get there eventually, and people are probably mad at me right now because I said that, but like, there's really not a lot to do on those systems yet, and I think it took the Wii U a few years. Like, it takes all consoles.
I don't think that's an uncontroversial opinion at all. Like, I like the PS4 UI more, and I like the actual physical design of the console more, but the games library, I think, is obviously worse.
Well, and the, like, exclusives this fall, like, Drive Club's not doing it for me.
Nope. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not doing it. It's barely working.
Yeah.
Marty, tell me about Dark Souls 2.
Oh,
which we have footage of here. Because I think there's probably a lot of gamers out there with this will probably end up being their favorite game of the year.
And it keeps, it kept delivering with three pieces of DLC, too, which really had some really interesting ideas that honestly provided some more interesting environments in the actual game proper. And again, we keep saying this about games, but I totally get if people are like, Dark Souls isn't for me. Like, half of this office is like, you know, Colin's like, I've tried it, I just don't, it's not for me. And I'm like, I get that, I respect that. But when the game is for you, this game, to me, sort of, it holds up like the tenets of old NES gaming, of stuff like Mega Man. And obviously, this looks nothing like Mega Man. But it's very much in Mega Man, you have a solid set of rules. And once you learn those rules and learn to appreciate those rules, then you feel so good about your accomplishments in the game itself.
I do find myself noticing that when a game does just have, like, old school game mechanics, you know, there's rules and objectives. When I notice it, when it seems like out of place, or it seems unusual when a game does that today.
Yeah, right.
I like it.
Yeah,
like, that's why I'm spending so much time with Spelunky right now.
Sure,
so it's just like, it's very simple. Here are the rules. Here's your objective.
It's super pure.
Whereas I'm also playing Last of Us Remastered, and it's more like an interactive movie.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things. There's trial and error. There's you're gonna do something. You're not sure what the outcome's gonna be. Whereas when you put enough time to Dark Souls, every time you swing your sword, you're immediately like, well, that was a bad decision. I'm about to get killed.
There's that purity in gameplay of, you know, games like Uncharted and Tomb Raider, and I love those experiences. But, like, if you make a leap and you're a little bit off, you'll see the game, like, nudge you onto, like, the platform, and then you grab onto it, and it wants to, like, shepherd you through it and be your friend. Whereas Dark Souls is not your friend.
Yeah, I think one of the things that might keep Dark Souls from being on a lot of people's Game of the Year list is that, by the time, so this game came out early in the year, but then E3 hit, and we saw Bloodborne, and then at every event afterwards, we got to play Bloodborne, and it's like, oh man, this game is just like a really pretty version of Dark Souls.
Yep.
And so it's hard, like, we have this thing, but then at the same time, we're all really looking forward to February when we can play Bloodborne.
Let's jump out of this footage, because we should talk about the game of the moment,
ooh,
which I feel like if, you know, from what I can...
Fantasy Life on 3DS. No?
There's literally a tumbleweed over there.
I'm going to start that game this week.
I'm not joking. I'm absolutely hooked on it.
Yeah.
It's not a Game of the Year contender, but it's fantastic.
Sure. I feel like, just from the sense I get in the office, if people were going to voting right now, I feel like Shadow of Mordor would have a very good chance of winning.
It seems
people were really, really pleasantly surprised with how cool this game was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised with how well all the different elements of it came together. Like, I felt like the story was compelling and interesting when it kind of probably didn't need to be. It's just like, slay orcs and be badass, mm-hmm. and who cares about the story? But it didn't feel like an afterthought. Like, yeah. that felt really well done. I thought the acting was really yeah. well done. Like, so all these sort of ancillary elements that orbit, like, around the actual gameplay were much more polished and well thought out than anything I expected.
Yeah, for me, the Nemesis system is the thing that sticks out yep. as an idea that feels really new and mm-hmm. next gen and sort of pointing towards where video games are going. Like, obviously, we've had, like, Titanfall looks gorgeous. Like, we've had really gorgeous games, but that's just sort of to be expected from next gen, whereas mm-hmm. The Nemesis system, the idea of creating this sort of community of NPCs that act... That react to what you do and react to things you don't do, and just it adds this dynamism to the environment, to the characters, and to the world that, man, all I can think about now going forward in games is like, man, I want Arkham Knight to have a system like this. Like, yep. I want Arkham Knight to have a thing where if a thug guns me down in the streets, he becomes like Falcone's lieutenant. Like, yeah. that's what I want to yeah. see in games. I think it's really cool. You played it, right?
Yeah, I played a lot of it. I don't think it's a 9.
Yeah.
I think this is your, like, classic 8. Yeah. This is a game
Classic 8.
It's a game I really enjoyed. It was fun. It's really not memorable to me. It was extremely repetitive. I love
a blast to play, says IGN. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, I mean, it was like a small blast.
Like a controlled... Like
a controlled explosion to play, yeah. says IGN.
Controlled
says
explosion.
IGN's Brian Altano.
Yeah.
I'm glad it exists. I had like a good time running around that world, doing a lot of the same things over and over. There would be hours at a time where I would just kind of look up and be like, I've just been stabbing people and running around and beating them up, and I don't know what I'm really getting from
sure.
this.
And then I
also don't care about the story at all. Yeah. I don't care about that. Like,
you're not a fantasy guy though.
No, not really. No, but I mean,
but so, you like Game of Thrones.
I watch it.
Okay.
I'm not like,
it's like seeing
oh
horses
my God.
Get murdered.
Yeah. I watch it. I'm not one of those people that, like, you know, cuts myself over it or anything like that. But
that would be
huge contingent of fans doing that. Mordor's great. I'm glad I played it. I don't think it's gonna be when I rank my list of like the 5 or 10 best games of the year, I don't think it'll be there.
Special cases are Telltale's series. Mm-hmm. So Wolf Among Us and Walking Dead season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We reviewed their individual episodes, mm-hmm. which have got very high scores, usually in the 9s, but we haven't given a full score to the entire season, which we're talking about doing now.
We are, especially now that they're out on Xbox One and PS4.
Oh, yeah, I finally need to. I totally ignored, I wasn't on like a media blackout, but I just didn't read any of our Walking Dead reviews. Mm-hmm. I didn't pay any attention to any of it because I was waiting for the whole season to be out.
Yeah.
And then I kind of forgot.
Yeah.
So those could also be contenders.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely. Really good. Yeah, really good. It's going to be interesting viewing them because I'm going to be updating the Wolf Among Us one and Mitch is going to be updating the Walking Dead one. And it's interesting to look at the games as a package as a whole because we see, like, both of us, I mean, everyone who sort of played a game like the Wolf Among Us saw that, like, it had very obvious highs and lows.
Yeah. Why is episode four always so bad?
I don't know. I felt that from all three of the series, episode 4 has been the low point. But then it comes back, and episode 5 is incredible.
Yeah. See, it's weird to me because I don't think about those games episodically because I always sort of play them all in a week.
Oh, yeah.
And even if I don't, it'll be like I'll play the first episode, and then 2 months will go by, and I'll play like a few in a row. Or 4 months, 5 months will go by, and I'll finish the whole season. The Walking Dead season 2 was excellent. I had just that incredible story. Mm-hmm. The characters this time around were really great. I don't think it topped season 1, but I think it was really good. Was it my favorite game this year? No. Like, I think when my brain associates my experience with that game, it sort of files it along with movies and TV shows more than it does.
They're actually becoming less game-like.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
They're getting rid of puzzles. They're getting rid of...
I feel like you're sort of a nut... Like, your hand in that game is just... a finger that's slowly nudging along a story little by little.
Which is like, awesome. Like, I don't mind paying for that and experiencing that.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, it does make it harder for it to be in the game of the year.
Yeah, I don't want to be one of those, like, I hate the whole, like, is it a game argument thing that always comes up. Like, yeah, it's a video game. But I think it feels more like a sort of traditional interactive experience to me. Like, it feels kind of like a point-and-click adventure game. And its cinematics kind of move it a little bit towards, like, a TV or movie more for me. Mm-hmm. Like I said to people when I was playing it, that was excellent, but I think I would have just rather watched this on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the big thing for me with, especially with Wolf Among Us, was that it sort of proved that Walking Dead Season 1 wasn't a fluke.
Sure.
That Telltale is a company that has made some cool games in the past, but then they like made Jurassic Park, and I was like, well, what's going to happen?
They made a Law & Order game.
Yeah, they made a Law & Order game. But then, yeah, Wolf Among Us proved season one wasn't a fluke, and then season two proved, okay, you should have faith in this company. So I'm really excited for going forward, Tales from the Borderlands, and especially Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Game Horse Murder.
And Walking Dead season three.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah, so still to come this year, two Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah.
Call of Duty's next week.
Yeah.
What else are the big ones? Oh, Dragon Age Inquisition.
Halo Master Chief.
Super Smash Brothers.
Far Cry 4.
Master Chief Collection, Far Cry 4. Oh yeah, Far Cry 4.
Do we actually think that either Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty will be on our Game of the Year watch?
The Assassin's Creeds for me are a huge black hole. Like, I've heard some people play them and say, man, this is incredible, and I've had some people play them and be like, eh.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I just can't remember the last time. I mean, has IGN ever given Assassin's Creed a
Well, Game of the Year? Assassin's Creed 2 was up there. It was fighting with Uncharted 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Again, there are more games. I love playing those games, but
it's one of those games I feel like they'll always be a nominee and never the winner.
Yeah. Totally.
Which
yeah,
sort of describes that franchise. Like, yeah, they're always super good, but then they're always kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I'm really excited to see how Unity turns out. I mean, Unity seems like this is their one that they're pushing as, like, this is the one that changes the formula. So yeah. Excited to see how that turns out.
Yeah, if they nail that, then I'm all in.
I'm more excited about Rogue, honestly. Although I'm so torn because I don't want to play it on last gen.
Wait 6 months.
I know.
All right, moving on. This week we found out that the Xbox One is getting a temporary price drop over the holidays, but for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Dropping the price to $349 here in the US.
So weird.
Less than a year.
So weird. Yeah.
Less than a year after launch, it went from $500 to $349.
Yeah. So we've been talking about this. We were talking about other console price drops, and I argue that the last price drop doesn't count as a price drop.
Because they just removed Kinect.
Yep.
I mean, sure.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Like, this is the first actual price drop, in my opinion.
Sure.
I mean, I guess it depends on whether you were, like, most people were buying the Xbox One just for the Xbox One, not the Kinect anyway.
Yeah, certainly. Right? That's what I did. Yeah. I did not want the Kinect.
Never been hooked up.
Yeah, once we started using it in the office, I was like, this is not what I need when I play video games.
Yeah.
When I bought the 3DS at launch and it price dropped, 8 months later, Nintendo gave me a bunch of free NES games,
like
GBA games. I kind of want an apology from Microsoft. I mean, I'm $150 out from what somebody buying an Xbox One today gets.
So you don't think that's just the risk that comes with being an early adopter?
Oh, absolutely
it's
is.
It's not even a risk. It's a guarantee.
Absolutely a guarantee. And I buy, like I said before, I buy everything at launch. But I don't feel like it's something that I really got a great value for for this time around.
I mean, I think... a mea culpa goes a long way of a, like, here's $20 in credit to the store.
Sure.
Like, that's cool. I can buy two indie games. I
mean,
and Super Time Force.
Secret way to do it is, hey, let's reward the day one edition people.
Yeah.
You know? If you have that little stamp on your thing, then, here's a free game.
Yeah.
Something that simple.
It's just part of the, we've been talking lately about how Microsoft kind of seems to, like, be doing everything right. To make up for their missteps when they launched at least announced the Xbox One.
I mean,
a price drop over the holiday season, it's $50 less than the PS4. Like, it seems brilliant.
And those are bundles. The $350 bundle is the Sunset Overdrive bundle. You're going to have the Assassin's Creed Unity and Black Flag bundle.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic deal.
Yeah.
Unity and Black Flag. Like, Black Flag is not a B-tier.
It was great. It was awesome. That was a really well-written review, too.
It's the second best Assassin's Creed game.
Whoa.
I said it.
Good for you.
Yeah, it just, remains to be seen if it's enough. I have a feeling, like, Microsoft learned last generation that people bought the console where everybody were playing games online.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that ecosystem starts very early, and because games are so sort of entwined with that
social
system
aspect,
the social aspect now, if PS4 sort of planted that flag early, then it's tough to sort of, work around that.
Mm-hmm. But the PS3 did catch up worldwide eventually, right? Like, that console was dead, but then it wasn't. Like, they just kept doing their thing and kept executing on their vision, and then the PS3 and 360 about sold almost the same number of consoles around the world. So I see it being a similar situation with the Xbox One.
I don't think they're going to go back on this price drop.
I agree.
I cannot imagine.
Now the price goes back up?
It's insane.
I can't imagine that.
Why would they announce it as temporary to motivate people to buy?
I think so. And then I think come January, they're going to be like, we were so happy with everyone buying it.
There's zero chance that console goes back up in price.
Ooh, I hadn't even thought about that.
That'd be weird if it did.
It's just a crazy idea to even...
Doesn't it cost... How much does the Wii U cost? Is it
$300?
Yeah, I think it's $299 now.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you sure? Yeah, I guess I bought a refurbished.
I mean, the one.
Viewers, how much does the Wii U cost? Let us know in the chat window.
The ones they sell now are bundled with a whole bunch of games and stuff like that. So,
I own all three consoles. I'm playing my Xbox One more and more and more often these days. Mm-hmm. Sunset Overdrive is really good. Halo Master Chief Collection is going to be really, really good, and some of us are already playing that a little bit.
Spoilers.
Well, but even so, like, you know everything that's in it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like any of that's a surprise. It absolutely trumps. Like, I haven't turned my PS4 on for anything but Netflix in quite a while.
Sorry, Shuhei.
Sorry, Shuhei.
All right. Do you know that this week is Halloween?
What?
Ooh. Yeah. Whoa. Oh, that's going to be a scary logo.
There's no spookies back there.
We should probably talk about some horror games.
Yeah.
I've put together a sort of a brief history of horror games here. What do you guys think? Do you guys know what the first horror game was?
Haunted House.
Spooky's Castle.
Well, thanks. Spoilers, jeez.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, you're totally
right.
We
actually did. I wrote about this, and I've already forgotten.
Yeah, you're totally right. Haunted House on the Atari 2600, which we've got the box art of here. It's 1982,
that
I think,
box
when this
art
came
is
out.
So
that box art is super creepy.
And super like the not representative of what
the game
is.
Yeah, the game is just like bleep bloops.
What is
the
game? Nine video games.
So, yeah, I love the wording. It's Haunted House, video computer system, game program. Both of those are trademarked. They trademarked game program and video computer system. And then there's nine video games included. Ghosts, Bats, Tarantulas, one-player game.
I feel like it's one the ghosts, and then a player game.
The
one?
Ghosts, Bats, and Tarantulas are just, they're just features of the game. That they're listing. This game includes ghosts, bats.
You're in a store with your mom. Mom, can I get this game? No. Come on, it has tarantulas in it. All right.
To be fair, they did include bats and a spider on the box.
That's not
and
a tarantula, but it is a spider.
You are just eyes. You just are just a set of eyes. Your avatar is just eyes moving around the haunted house.
Eyes.
How spooky could this have possibly been?
It was not very spooky.
I'm sure it's not. But this is surprising. This is 1982. Mm-hmm. Video games have been around for a decade-ish since the Magnavox Odyssey. I'm surprised it took. I bet there was actually think, what was the, was Odyssey the system where you, it came with overlays that you actually pasted up over your
that
screen?
You did,
there was like a Haunted House game for that, too.
Although, I feel like,
I'm sure that wasn't very scary.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't know, I wonder what the first actual scary game is. Maybe we'll get to that.
Side note, we get mad a lot these days about like pre-rendered footage in game trailers and stuff like that. That's what box arts looked like back then.
Yeah.
It was a painting of a completely different situation that never actually happened in the game. Like the what we get now, and we're like, that's not gameplay. That was the 70s and 80s and 90s for
what
the most
part. What about Faxanadu on the Super Nintendo?
Oh, that's just a hillbilly with a banjo, and it's just
Axley. Yeah,
Axley.
I love that you all knew. Like I said, the wrong thing, and you translated it correctly.
What about that Chrono Trigger? Oh, the hillbilly with the banjo.
Yeah, Axley.
In 1986, Chiller was released in arcades. You guys know this one?
No.
There was actually a port to the NES, so we've got footage of this here. This is a light gun game where all you do is
Jesus!
What?
You like shoot the people and get
points.
You
shoot them. Yeah. Are they alive?
Yeah, they're like.
Wait a minute! Oh my god!
Ghost demons! What is happening?
This is what the game.
You're shooting that guy. He's still moving his head.
And you can like do stuff like shoot the guillotine to make
it
fall
down. Is that a cat?
Down.
Is that a cat eating stuff?
Yeah, a cat will come by or
holy
a dog
crap.
Picks up his hands.
What is
this
happening?
This is 1986.
What the hell?
Yeah,
so dude, not, why are you doing this to these people that were already being tortured?
Your monster meter's at 19.
Oh, yeah, shoot the guillotine.
I've never heard of this game.
I've never heard of this either.
They ported this to the NES.
Shoot that. Oh, he shot the guy that was peeking through
this
the window.
This is available on the NES in a little slightly toned down version.
I hope so.
They changed the people into monsters.
Oh, he shot the dead head that got cut off already.
Changing the people into monsters is not slightly toning this down. That completely changes the whole deal.
Game over.
So, I don't like that one bit.
Oh my goodness gracious.
That was really rough. So wait a minute, those people got kidnapped and then you had to kill them on top of
you
that?
You shot them, you like put them in
all their parts.
Devices and then you shot them to bits.
That
like
was in
targeting their limbs.
How do you win?
Sure,
what's
like,
winning?
You just get a lot of points and shoot the people as best you can. And then post your initials.
Okay, so that's like literally more horrific than most violent video games we have now.
I know.
That was complete... that was insane, senseless violence. You're killing people who are already in a bad predicament.
Yeah. That's a literal
bad guys.
That's a literal torture game.
Where was Hillary Clinton when we needed her?
That's fine.
She's probably in Arkansas.
Where was Tipper Gore?
Yeah,
she was at that rap concert getting mad.
What arcades carried that?
Jeez. right? Not Haunted Trails in Chicago.
Wow. It should have, though, because that was not Sports World in northern New Jersey.
Well, speaking of arcades, an arcade near my grandparents' house at the mall called Nickelodeon.
Ooh.
In 1988, this game called Splatterhouse showed up, which we have footage of here. I was obsessed with this game. This is the entire reason I wanted a TurboGrafx-16.
That's hard as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also gross.
When I was a kid, I loved horror movies. I loved gory movies. Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. So when I saw this game, I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe this.
This was also, like, as an NES kid growing up, like, this character was so big and animated.
That's what everyone remembers about this game, is the sprites are huge.
Yeah.
And I also just loved the gore. Like, you
You
can find the 2x4, hit enemies, and they splat up against the wall behind you.
Right?
Oh, yeah, that was great.
And I'm sure, I never actually played Splatterhouse very much, but I'm sure it's one of those games that's, like, not actually very good.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's just for the gore factor.
So there was, did that, like, remake recently ever come out? I remember it got...
It was a few years ago, and it was
did
terrible.
Actually come out. Yeah, it was pretty,
it was really
kind of garbage.
I like that this game has the best of both worlds, because you get to play as the mask-wielding, like, monster, but then you're killing, you're Jason, but then you're killing other monsters, so it's like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, you're not even Jason, but
Well, basically.
They just took that look, kind of.
Yeah, I'm still... is sort of in shock of that second game.
I can't get it out of my head.
Also, because
I love it.
A lot about video game history, and I've never seen that game before.
Yeah,
I love that these.
David, did you make that game?
I manufactured a game. How about this one? In 1989.
Oh, this game is so bad. This game is so awful.
What a weird
way to start a game.
NES. There was ever a movie-based game that has anything less to do with the movie it's based on. You fight zombies.
You're in the camp at least.
This game was this game was dark. This is a really dark game.
This game was also notoriously terrible.
You had a children meter in the corner, and those kids die one by one, and they're all sad.
Look how happy your character is. Look how George is.
Oh my god!
He's wearing this purple jumpsuit.
It's so good. And they sold at San Diego Comic Con like a year or two ago. They sold the Jason figure with this color. Yeah,
that's really good.
So George died.
Yeah.
R.I.P. George.
That was rough.
I know. Where are we?
So we're still not up to any game that's genuinely spooky, except for that torture game.
No, that game was scary.
That's spooky is not the word. Spooky is an endearing word. That was just messed up. That was mucked up.
That was that was 1989. If we jump forward to 1992, that brings us to Night Trap on the Sega CD.
There you go.
Which we can see in its glorious full motion video here.
I had a Sega CD and I wanted Night Trap so bad.
Yeah.
Said I was stuck with Shark.
This was one caused controversy with Congress.
Sure.
And it was one of the games that they cited along with Mortal Kombat that led to the ESRB. They said, you know, children, these are rotting children's brains.
Before this, you could just buy whatever. Like, there was no ratings.
Well, also, like, now it's like real people.
Yeah.
Like, even though it's like really terrible quality video, it's like now, you know, there's all these scenes of these girls being killed. So it's like, it looks a lot more real than Super Mario Brothers or Friday the 13th on the
NES.
How
many women live in this bedroom?
I think it's a sorority.
But they have a sorority with two beds? There was like six women in there.
Is 45 the number of women who live in this house? Because that is a lot of women. What is that?
I don't know, but I love the quality of this. I wish this was like a filter on my iPhone. I wish I could take video and make it look like this, right? It looks awesome.
To make our own Night Trap.
So in case, I don't know if the video will actually get there, but the whole thing is like there's invaders who are trying to capture and kill all the girls, but you can Night Trap them.
Yeah, I guess.
I think that was the verb.
You had to Night Trap the invaders.
I think so.
Yep.
Or you were the invaders. And then you got your Duck Hunt gun, you shoot everyone.
Yeah.
I've never actually played Night Trap. Now I kind of want to.
Maybe the first Sierra game was 1996, because that's when Resident Evil came out on PlayStation.
Survival horror became a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really good. In 1987, though, another zombie game came to arcades. This was House of the Dead.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Love this game.
Somehow this game is 1,000 times less messed up.
This was like, I would specifically ask to get dropped off at the movie theater a half an hour before the movie started so I could play this game with my friends.
Yeah, that was always a big movie theater thing, right? Yeah. Like, the arcades were like half the reason to go.
Yeah.
And it was always, it was light gun games because, like, they sold light guns for your, like, PS1, but they were never as good as this.
Like, it felt like a distinctly arcade experience.
Yeah.
It was, like, harder, impossible to get at home.
Yeah, same thing, like Time Crisis and Lethal Enforcer. Oh, look at that demon. Look at that jerk. Also, this is not a good time to hold your fire. This is when you should be firing at the demon's wings.
I love the voice. I mean, people give a lot of crap to Resident Evil for having bad voice acting. But this was just like, they're like, Gary, did you find the grenade? Like that, you would pay money to have someone yell that at you. And then you would go see Congo. look at this guy.
Yeah.
Here's some life, Gary. I don't remember that was his name.
I don't think so.
It was like really gross too. There's like these nasty worms everywhere. Like, And it was actually what I liked about this game was it was one of the first like first person zombie games I played. Mm-hmm. So like when you ran out of ammo and you're firing at the screen and you didn't have time to reload, they would just jump at your face and you could just claw them
onto
the
screen.
Yep. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
And then for Dreamcast, do you guys remember Typing of the Dead?
Yes.
Yeah. That was also in the arcades first.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You had to bring your own keyboard to the arcade. I never did that.
BYOK. And then what was the House of the Dead on Wii?
Overkill.
Yeah, that was
like
in a grindhouse.
Yeah, it was like
that was fun to just like have a friend over.
And this is why I love about what I love about video games. It's so weird. I randomly found that game on iOS the other day.
Oh yeah, no, I played it.
It's on iOS.
Like you can play that entire Wii game on your phone now by dragging your finger.
They
around.
Have multiple control schemes. Like the easy mode is just to tap because it's impossible to miss. But then they actually have dragging to drag a reticle. I played that at a Sega event.
That was what there was this sort of like grindhouse film resurgence for a few years with the movie Grindhouse with Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, and a bunch of people started making games like that, and that was one of them, and it sort of had all the scratch marks and all that stuff.
Do you know, remember they released Grindhouse over Easter weekend?
Yeah, I do.
Probably should have waited, just done over Halloween weekend.
Yeah, just wait 6 months. Done
better
because they also put it on the Wii. Which was like, okay.
Well, House of the Dead.
Yeah. Oh, Grindhouse, yeah. Weird time.
Sorry, I mistakenly said House of the Dead was 1988. It was 1997. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil 2 was 1998. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That game was awesome. I remember I don't have footage of it, but I remember the CG scenes in that. I was like, whoa, this is like next level.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah. When they first showed that like fire outside of the police station.
Yeah for sure.
It's so realistic.
And just really interesting how the two campaigns, like you chose Leon or Claire, and then you had their A campaign, and you played the other one's B campaign.
So they
played
the Lickers.
Yeah, the Lickers. Really nasty. Yeah.
It was the start of Resident Evil becoming more action-oriented. I mean, it was still very survival horror back then, but it was like setting it down this path that it's kind
of that eventually became Resident Evil 4, which is sort of not horror.
What I loved about Resident Evil 2 was that they put you in that police station that was basically, like, if you were a real cop, it would have been impossible to navigate.
You need the tiger's eye jewel to go
to get into the basement door.
I just want to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, like, that's I really like that game. Yeah. I think it had some great ideas.
1999 started the Silent Hill series,
which
is a very creepy series.
Yeah.
I've never played a Silent Hill game.
Did you play PT? No.
You don't really like horror games.
I don't
right?
like
he doesn't like being scared.
You like the word spooky, though.
I do like the word spooky.
You're not a fan of getting scared playing a video game?
Don't like being spooked.
Interesting.
What about two red things in the corner of your room?
I spook myself out. So I go to bed after my wife, and I do a check. Like, okay, you know,
And he stands in the corner staring at her.
Shut and lock the window. Make sure that the door is shut and locked. And, like, half the time the front door is not shut and locked yet.
That's not good.
I just forgot when I came home from work. And I always picture whenever I'm locking it, I picture someone being right on the other side of the door. And then they can hear me jostling the lock. And that's what I picture, like, in my head. And then I completely freak myself out. Like, they know I'm locking the door. And then it's just this
That's a very specific ghost.
I can't be the only one. The chat's on a little bit of a delay. We'll check the chat later.
The chat's pretty much, they're talking about Silent Hill now, so.
Yeah. Talk about the fact that you're a coward.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one that has the door locking thing. I think that's got to be pretty.
I usually just lock it when I walk in. Then I don't have to deal with any nighttime ghosts.
I just keep it unlocked, and then you have
just
friends.
The daytime ghosts.
Yeah, just the regular afternoon ghosts.
Yeah,
the bottom of the bottle ghosts.
1999 was also Resident Evil 3.
Yeah,
which I played. I didn't like it as much, but it's still.
Yeah, it reused a lot of assets from 2. But I thought the idea of Nemesis being this like Kool-Aid man who just busted through walls.
And we're kind of seeing that with Alien Isolation.
Yeah, where you can't really use a guide because it's like, hey, maybe he won't bust through this wall, but maybe he will. And then
the thing that was so smart about Nemesis was it sort of played on the way that Resident Evil 1 and 2 were built. We're like, okay, I'm safe. Went through the door, I'm safe.
Because there was one room with a typewriter that he could still bust through.
Oh, it's like, so mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting to have a game like that where you're sort of just being stalked the whole time. Mm-hmm. You didn't see that a lot in games before that.
Yeah, you see that a lot more now with Outlast, with Alien.
It was him and the son with the sunglasses from Super Mario 3, who's one of those scary
guys. That guy is such a jerk.
Is it Clock Tower, the guy with the giant scissors?
Yeah.
Old Clock.
Yeah. Man, horror games used to be really, maybe that's why I don't play them anymore. They were way spooky back then.
2002 was the Resident Evil remake, which is still maybe my favorite Resident Evil.
Might be
on GameCube. It was so good.
Yep. It's so gorgeous.
It introduced Lisa Trevor, who's one of the most deranged characters in video game history.
I mean, you could like hear her chains.
Yeah, disgusting, haggly woman that lived in the basement, dragged chains around her, she had tentacles on her.
That boss fight, because you have to enter that room. I barely remember how like specifically that game was put together, but I remember the way the puzzles worked is you had to go in there like 10 times.
Yeah.
And then like that 10th time, she busts out of the coffin or whatever it is. And then you're like, ooh!
We'll play that soon. It's coming out, the remake HD.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Resident Evil Remake was so good, and, like, the writing was so good. It's one of the only games where I actually sat and read, like, all the optional diaries.
Really good world building.
The guy has a diary about turning into a zombie, and he's like, and then it's the itchy tasty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, you're right. 2002 was also Eternal Darkness and The Thing. Remember the video game version of The Thing?
Yeah.
That was really interesting because it was like a canon sequel to the movie.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Really, yeah. 2005 was Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
Also an awesome.
That's this one.
Yeah. That's awesome for Resident Evil.
One of the best.
But you're right. That's when it started to step away from horror, but it was still really good.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, it was incredible. And it sort of defined what third person gaming would be afterwards.
Yeah.
And it did have plenty. I mean, this first time burlap sack chainsaw man appears. You're like, yep, this is scary.
I mean, I thought, like, just kind of moving away from, obviously it's Resident Evil, so it got there eventually, but moving away from the sort of like supernatural.
Yeah.
And starting with just this town of crazed religious people, this cult.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, like, it set you on fire.
It very much felt to me like the first few chapters of that game felt like you're watching some messed up 1970s Spanish horror movie.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know what this is about. I don't know why this is happening. People would throw knives at you. You could shoot them out of the air. You could...
They'd follow you up ladders.
Yeah, the traversal of like going on roofs, busting through windows and stuff like that. And once the chainsaw guy came and you just heard that, turned around and cut your head off.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I got to blast through some of these last ones. We're running out of time. 2005 was also Fear, which there have been two or three.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
at this point,
that was Monolith.
This is that's like a first
Shadows of Mordor.
That's like a scary first-person shooter.
Yeah,
that's interesting. 2008 was Dead Space.
Oh yeah,
one of my very favorite survival horror games. That's really good. 2010 was Alan Wake.
Yeah, Remedy.
I really like Alan Wake.
Yeah,
that was a beautiful game at the time.
That was gorgeous.
2011, Dead Space 2. 2012, Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
Yeah. That was a big one.
I haven't played that one.
In a different direction.
It did. A lot of crazy sort of procedural psychological stuff. Mm-hmm. It is. And that's one of the games that sort of created the whole Let's Play movement. That was one of the first things I think PewDiePie
did. Play it and watch people get scared.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's sort of like, I don't know, like horror's gone through these different phases, right? Mm-hmm. Where like when they figured out survival horror, that was when the genre really hit its stride. But then people got tired of it and it became more action oriented. And then the horror was like Resident Evil, which wasn't even really horror anymore, like in Resident Evil 4 and 5. And Amnesia figured out a way to make horror fresh again.
Yeah, by stripping
and make
you
it
away
genuinely
from
scary again. Mm-hmm. And like there's no combat, just running and hiding.
Yep.
And
spooky.
2013 was The Last of Us,
mm-hmm.
which has some generally scary moments in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also Outlast.
Oh, yeah. Spooky. Spooky.
It's okay.
It's
pretty good.
Gorgeous.
Then this year we have The Evil Within and Alien Isolation.
Yeah. It's funny, a guy like Shinji Mikami, who started with Resident Evil 1, did Resident Evil 4, and is now doing Evil Within.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been a few moments during that game where I'm genuinely nervous to turn a corner.
Yeah.
And some people played it and they're like, that's not scary. And I'm like, I don't know what scares you then. Like, maybe you're just impenetrable to fear. But to me, like, there are moments in that game, sitting in a dark room with surround sound headphones on and playing it and just being like, I'm worried.
If my fiance touches me on the shoulder, I'm going to scream.
If somebody walked in and tapped my shoulder, I would turn around and stab them. It'd be a real murder in my house. I'd be like, oh my God! I'd be flipping out. It's terrifying.
Why do you play games with a knife right
next to
you? You don't?
Only Evil Within.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Magical.
Side note, do you remember the Resident Evil 4 GameCube?
The chainsaw controller.
Yeah. The worst controller in video game history.
Next to the Wu-Tang.
Yes.
Magical Daniel UK says in the chat window, Alan Wake is my favorite game of all time.
What?
So wow.
Good, yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Rackham says, Alan Wake is pretty good.
Welcome to the internet.
Story is kind of dumb, though. he's like, write the whole review. Quantum Break opinion? I think that game looks really cool.
I think it looks really cool, too. Yeah. Those guys make really interesting games.
Zaitsev mentions one I left off the list, System Shock.
Yeah, that's right. Sure. Ken Levine.
Which I never played because it was a PC game in the 90s and I didn't have a PC. But anyway. You know what's really hot right now? That new album from Taylor Swift.
Oh, 1989.
I haven't heard it, but we're going to see if we can...
Todd is just like, where is this going?
We're going to see if we can get on some of that SEO goodness, and we're going to talk about the best games of 1989.
Ah, well done.
That got us somewhere.
Can you guys name a game from 1989?
Mega Man 2.
Cheater.
There's a lot of good ones. Yeah, Mother came out.
I don't even want to, I'm cheating because we're working on a project that talks about games from 89. So.
Okay. Super Mario Land, SimCity.
Well, so I lift that off this list because even though that launched with the Game Boy, I don't think people particularly liked that game very much.
I did not like the first one.
Yeah.
I appreciated the hell out of it when it first came out because I was just like, I can bring Mario on the bus finally.
Yeah.
But it was weird. It was
he's
like
not weird. Normal Mario, he's weird Mario.
He gets turtles turn into bombs, yeah. He fights pharaohs.
He's on bullets. Planet Earth. Yeah. For some reason, he's not even in the Mushroom Kingdom. Yeah.
And they introduced Daisy for the first time in that game. So that was significant. That was her first appearance.
Yeah.
But what did come out in 89, Populous.
Yeah.
Peter Molyneux.
Yeah.
The first God game, which, speaking of, what happened to God games? There aren't any more like God games anymore.
He's making Godus.
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 Well, yeah.
Gouda.
Gouda.
Someone needs to remake ActRaiser or give us a sequel to that. That's the best.
That's Mitch Dyer's favorite game.
Yeah.
He's Canadian.
Jinx.
Both Populous and the original SimCity came out in '89.
Yeah. Well, right. Wow. So yeah, the first early masterpieces from two of the most notable developers of all time.
Yeah. Like you said, Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
Also. A string of NES sequels. Castlevania 3 also came out that year. River City Ransom was that year.
Yeah. Excellent game.
Barf.
Strider, both NES and the arcade games came out that year. DuckTales.
Man, DuckTales was so good.
So was
in the studio just well.
Dragon Warrior came to North America.
Huge.
Year. Yeah, the first.
I remember getting that with my subscription to Nintendo Power.
Me too. This was like a really strong NES year.
Yeah.
But since the Game Boy came out, I thought Tetris would be a better game to call out. The Game Boy Tetris game.
Dragon Quest is one of the first games that I can remember. I obviously didn't play it in 89 because I was 4, but I played it a few years later, and it's one of the first games I can remember like writing like things down in a notebook. I had this like crazy person. He looked like the Origami Killer. Not the Origami Killer. The guy in San Francisco that killed a bunch of people.
Oh, Zodiac.
Zodiac Killer. Not the Origami Killer.
Origami Killer. I had like Zodiac Killer notebooks filled with like just numbers and scribbles.
Don't you wish
about
you could like find that, like still have that at your parents' house?
Yeah.
For which game?
Dragon Quest.
Oh, Dragon Quest. They called it Dragon Warrior first. Yeah. So like the first one was called. The first NES games were all Dragon Warrior, and then they started. Yeah.
Which I don't know why. Maybe they thought people didn't know what quests
were. What is this quest?
What is the strange Japanese word quest?
You would have to. So I wouldn't know how much health. What I remember doing for hours is you didn't know how much health monsters had. So I would just trial and error it. Like, okay, I did 12 points of damage and he died. So that guy has between this amount of health, and then I would fight him. I would grind him again and again to figure out how much. Like,
this was like as you were a young kid.
Yeah, this slime has 40 health. Or whatever.
That's pretty intense. It's a lot of effort.
Yeah. On the computer, Prince of Persia was released. That had amazing animation at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went back even like a couple days ago and looked at the VHS footage, and they have Jordan Mechner like taking, animated VHS his footage. Brother.
Oh.
Filmed his brother making those jumps, and he just one-to-one'd it in the game.
He did a post-mortem for that game at GDC a few years ago and actually showed that footage for the first time.
Really, it's awesome. Interesting.
He had his brother jumping around like the living room, like in his pajamas with like a stick. And
like climbing things.
And he just painted over it, you know.
What do you call that, like, genre of, like, I don't even know, like, Abe's Odyssey out of this world. Heart of Darkness?
Yeah.
Oh,
man. You can make up a name for it.
Is it a puzzle platformer? I guess they're not really puzzles.
No, I think you're right. I think that's it. Because
it's more like
obstacle.
Obstacore.
I love those.
To me, they were trial and error death simulators.
Yeah. That's
mostly what happened. I'd be like, oh, cool. Oh, God, I'm dead.
For me, it's things I appreciate but don't like. I appreciate like all those games, but no.
It was a lot of like you're walking across a platform and it falls out and you fall into a pile.
Yeah, so now you know. Like, next time, you know. Yeah.
Prince of Persia specifically, the animation was so specific that you would need to like get your foot in just the right spot, then hit the jump button.
Yeah.
And then 2.5 steps later, he's going to leap across the platform.
Yeah, you had to start your jump like 5 minutes before you actually.
Prepare for liftoff.
But Outworld was better about that.
There was that really good HD remake on Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was super pretty.
Yeah, it was good. Also, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the graphic adventure.
That was
I don't know if you guys played that one, but that was the LucasArts.
Yeah.
I didn't play Last Crusade. I played the original one. I played Fate of Atlantis.
Yeah.
It was great. Okay,
wait, that one came first?
No, I'm just saying that's the one I played.
Oh, yeah, but it was original. It was an original story, like not based on a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a Last Crusade.
Yeah, it's really good. So my friend, I didn't have a computer, but my best friend next door did, and he got the game, and it came with like a clue book, and there'd be like points in the game where you had to like...
Yeah.
Like use this viewfinder, like there's like
that's so awesome.
It was like a grid, and then you use this red screen viewfinder to put over the grid and like find the secret word.
That is so cool.
Yeah, how fun is
so
that? Fun.
I miss that stuff. So that's how you kill the used games industry. Just ship every game with like a red disc that you have to hold up to your TV that comes. That's the way to do it.
That's how you combat piracy.
Yeah,
but then it just
hoses GameStop.
It completely hoses you if you rent a game like Metal Gear Solid, requiring the codec.
Oh, yeah.
That's on the back of this the CD case. It was, and it's like, well,
what was it? There was like an X-Men game that came to Genesis.
Yeah, you had to hit the reset button.
Yeah, right? And there's one part that if you didn't hit the reset button, like you couldn't continue.
Yeah,
and if you didn't have the manual, you didn't know that. Yeah. And I rented the game, and I was like, well, this game sucks.
It's broken.
The game just shouts at
you have to reset the computer. Yeah. Reset the computer. Like, no one in a million years would be like, okay, I have to hit reset.
That's
some next level.
That's like Kojima-esque, though.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Touch your foot.
Bonk's Adventure was released in 1989.
God, that's really such an ugly character.
What do you mean? Well,
his head is so big.
Yeah.
Why is his head so big?
He owns it, though.
Not very many people play that game because only like five people own the TurboGrafx.
Sure.
Yeah. But that's a really good platformer game.
I remember I had a friend that got the TurboGrafx 16, and he invited me over his house. And I'm like, on the way over, I'm like yelling to my dad in the car about how great it's going to be because he's got this new video game system. Yeah. My dad's like, yeah, that's fine, whatever. And we get there, and he's like, here it is. Bonk. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Like, okay,
like, I have Super Mario World at home. Yeah. He's like, no, this is this guy with the big head and he fights dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs!
And he eats meat that he finds on the ground, and there's a volcano.
And then he like gets crazy.
Yeah, and he gets like, really mad. He's like, oh, that meat was really bad.
The game
was
really good.
I have a soft spot for Bonk, but the TurboGrafx, like, if you were a TurboGrafx kid, you had to convince yourself so hard that it was like as good as Mario.
What if someone like Naughty Dog made a photorealistic Bonk game, except your head was still that big.
Okay, that would be really
that would be
scary.
A video game boss. People would try to shoot it.
He would be a monster.
Yeah. He's actually the fifth monster in Evolve.
This is a deep cut, but is Bonk and Chuckrock, are they related?
No, these are different.
They're just
different
completely different. Yeah,
they're related only by
and Joe and Mac are also not.
Yeah, related. And Fred Flintstone, they are not related.
The reason was Chuckrock 2 is son of Chuck, and so then you're basically playing this little kid.
I thought it was go Chuck yourself.
Well, that's,
TurboGrafx 16 is about to knock video games back into the Stone Age.
1989 was the year that Solitaire and Minesweeper were bundled with Windows.
Wow.
Man, I want to start doing Minesweeper Let's Plays.
Yeah.
No one else wants to do those with me, though.
I'm like, don't click it. Don't. No, no, no! I think it's a great
idea.
It's
got a 5. I don't know what that means.
That's impossible. Man, that's crazy. That's crazy that in 89 people were...
I mean, you know what? That's the year casual gaming took over and started ruining the hardcore video game industry for everybody. All those grandmothers.
He's making a joke.
Yeah, I'm joking.
That's also the year Batman came out in movie theaters.
It was also the year Taylor Swift was born.
Probably.
I think that's probably why it is. Yeah.
Before we go, let's check in with the listeners.
Hi, listeners.
This is Will in Edinburgh. Says a few weeks ago, you talked about on the show about important games which you never got around to playing. I was inspired and began playing Ico and Shadow of the Colossus for the first time.
Nice.
But this meant that I could not devote time to the latest titles like Destiny and Shadow of Mordor. Mm. I was wondering whether you thought it more important to develop an awareness of titles formative for the industry of gaming, or should the focus be upon the gaming here and now?
More important? I don't know. Play whatever you want.
Yeah, the focus should be probably just playing on what is fun for you.
I also think, like the Wu-Tang said, diversify your bonds.
Yeah,
they did say that. Do one for them, one for you.
And also be sure to protect your neck.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think that any of us could be able to do a show like this without having some sort of historical context. Like, I mean, we did it right here, right? We talked about the games this year, and we talked about the games in 1989.
Yeah.
I think like if you're a film student, it's important to not just watch the biggest comedies of the year, but go back and watch old black and white films. Like, I think there's a good historical sense there. I almost wish sometimes I could just pause the universe or just sort of consume a game like Link to the Past again, but I just don't have the time to do it. Like, I'd love to play through. There's hundreds of games I wish I could play through that I haven't been able to, but there's some, I think there's like, there's probably 20, 25 games that everybody should at least play for a little bit just to sort of get some sort of contextual appreciation of where video games are now.
It is hard to keep up. Yeah. You know, I'm not playing Shadow of Mordor or Destiny right now because I'm playing Spelunky. But it's
and
a game that... Hearthstone is... Yeah.
Doesn't even count.
Yeah.
That's not a game. That's just a lifestyle.
Hearthstone is just eternal.
I mean, we play games abnormally here at IGN. I mean, we play everything. And I don't think most people do or should. I mean, I think you sort of lose focus of a lot of what you're doing. But some people, if you only pick a few games to play each year and you have time to play older games, by all means, go back and play them.
But they're also just, they're so broad. Like, a movie has a set of, like, okay, it's going to be in between 90 minutes and 3 hours, and it's going to have actors on a screen, and they're going to be filmed by a camera. But, like, the game Civilization and the game Uncharted are nothing alike. And, I like both of those games, but, like, And they're both incredible. Like, they're both going to get incredible scores on IGN, but that doesn't mean someone has to play and enjoy them both. So it's like people are going to gravitate towards, like, there can be someone playing weird war games on the computer, like, you know, Europa Universalis or something that, like, never in a million years would I love that, but they're still a gamer, and they're getting this completely different experience from this medium that I am.
Yeah, yeah, it is harder to catch up just by sheer time-wise.
Mm-hmm. Marty, we got a question about Sunset Overdrive.
Ooh.
Comes from Tim W.
Hi, Tim. Is this Tim Wagner? I knew a Tim Wagner.
Probably. Let's go with that.
Okay.
He says, I've been playing Sunset Overdrive. As much fun as it is, I can't stop wishing it was Jet Set Radio Future.
Sure. Yeah.
It seems to be missing the nuanced momentum and strategy of maneuvering that was required in Sunset's spiritual grandfather.
Okay.
Is this a result of trying to make games accessible to everyone? I recall a similar feeling with the latest SSX game.
That is a tough... That's a tough cookie.
The world was impressive, but the mechanics were too easy and strategy and style fell to the wayside of button mashing. What has happened to movement in games that it must be pick up and play by everyone?
That's a really good question. And yes, I definitely agree that Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future, Sunset Overdrive, especially traversal mechanics and sort of style, owe a debt of gratitude to those two games.
Sure.
But I wouldn't say that movement in Sunset Overdrive feels easier dumbed down. Like, I think compared to a lot of games, I think there's actually a barrier to entry. I think with Sunset Overdrive, the first hour or two, you sort of don't grasp how deep the traversal system is and sort of how wide your suite of tools are. And that's something that throughout the game, when you get the ability to bounce higher and to sort of do a ground smash and then immediately bounce off that and to air dash and to speed up, I think the traversal actually becomes a little bit better than Jet Set Radio Future, which is a game I love, but I felt like it was almost too unforgiving in Jet Set Radio. There'd be a lot of times where you'd have this amazing momentum, but the second you would hit a wall or a car, you would stop, and it would take so long to regain that momentum, and that was always really frustrating.
That's my memory of that game, too. I mean, Sunset Overdrive, this isn't a value judgment, so it's not good nor bad, but, like, my first impression of that game is there is so much going on.
Yeah.
Like, there's more going on in that game than maybe any game I've ever played.
It's a sensory overload, yeah.
Like, you're jumping on things and bouncing and shooting and switching weapons, and then there's things shooting back at you, and you have to dodge, and, like... It's incredible, like, but it's a lot. There's a lot, like as Altana likes to say, there's a lot to take in.
There's a lot.
A lot to unpack.
Yeah. Would you say let someone pack?
A lot to unpack.
Oh, I thought you were like, let someone pack. Strong political stance.
All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. If you joined us live today, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for helping us test this chat feature. Seems like you guys are having a lot of fun in the chat section there.
Whenever I glanced at it, it was a lot of cats.
Well, yeah, it's good.
It's the internet.
Today's cat day.
Oh, it is National Cat Day.
Yeah, that's true.
Is it really?
This was a lot of fun. Thank you. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Brian. Thank you to all of you who tuned in. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.